Hello and welcome to the Elastico podcast once more. It's the dream team back together. Myself, Chris Atkins, and on the line I have Rio Coimbra. Hello, Rio.
Hello, Chris. I thought the dream team might be Neymar and Gonzo, but you know, if we can be deputies for them, maybe.
Yeah, well, Neymar will join us next week live on the show, so look out for that. It's been another action-packed, well, fortnight since we did our last show. Plenty to talk about this week, Rio.
Yeah, we have some Libertadores action, we have the state championships that we've been covering, and some Brazil national team news, so you're right, lots to cover.
Plus, I've got a whole sack load of listener questions for you to answer, so look forward to that. I want you all to know that I haven't given Rio any preparation time on this, so he'll be going off the cuff when we get to that section. First up then, Rio, we had a half round of Libertadores action in the week. This is something that they don't copy the format of the Champions League where everyone plays at the same time. They spread it across a couple of weeks for certain rounds. Not all the Brazilian teams were in action then, but starting with Santos, they hosted Juan Auric of Peru. They won 2-0. It was a fairly convincing display, but it was a match noted more for off-the-ball incidents than what happened with the ball.
Yeah, mainly the kicking around of Neymar, essentially, I think is perhaps what you're referring to. You know, Neymar was essentially, obviously, very targeted by the defenders because everybody at this point fears him greatly. He still was man of the match, still got one of the goals for Santos, but the opposing team really kind of went after him. And Neymar had this one beautiful play where he beat five players. And I think after that, you know, it was all very aggressive towards him because they were fearing embarrassment, I think.
Well, anyone who watched the Premier League in about, I'd say, 98 will remember Juan Auric's striker, and that's Israel Zuniga, who used to play for Coventry City of all teams. He's now a 36-year-old captain of the Peruvian side. But here's Neymar's comments on the game in Rio. He said, "They fouled me hard the entire match. If I didn't jump out of some ball disputes, I wouldn't be talking to you right now. I'd be in hospital. It looked more like a UFC fight than a football match." He was fairly incensed. He got booked for diving at one point. And in the post-match interviews, he was fairly clear that he wasn't trying to win a free kick. He was trying to save his legs, if you like. Do you feel some sympathy for him when he does have to avoid these tackles?
You know, I do, because, you know, the thing is, Neymar is a very fast player, obviously, and so much of his game is, you know, beating players one-on-one with his trickery and his pace, and he does that very well. So, you know, I think a lot of times the defenders kind of unintentionally kick him, right, because they're kind of sticking their leg out to try and stop the ball, but, you know, the ball's already gone by the time their leg comes out, and it, you know, trips up Neymar, and maybe they kick him unintentionally. I think, you know, part of the thing to keep in mind is that there was kind of a torrential downpour in this game, so the pitch was very wet, so it's, you know, even more understandable for some more physical play to happen, because it's harder to control. Sometimes it's harder to control, right, your body and yourself when the ground is so wet and the ball is slippery and everything is slippery around you. So I, in part, blame kind of those factors. But, you know, I do think that the defenders certainly were going after him. I mean, I think that was fairly clear. I think they were trying to intimidate him. And I think Neymar is definitely justified in some of the comments that he made. I think he exaggerated a little bit. I don't think had he not sort of thrown himself to the ground a couple times that he wouldn't be standing today. But, you know, I think the referee could have done a better job of protecting him out there.
There's two Brazilian teams in that first group then. Internacional traveled to Bolivia to take on the Strongest. A 1-1 draw, it's a pretty good result in Bolivia. Gilberto, who we spoke about last week, Came from, I think, Santa Cruz up in the northeast. Last season, he struggled to settle in. He got a late goal there to pull Inter back level. It's a bit of a tough group, this one, with Inter, Santos, and obviously the strongest to benefit very much from a strong home advantage. And the strongest are clinging on in there. They're on 7 points alongside Internacional, and then Santos are on 9 points with Juan Elric yet to pick up a point. So progression isn't assured for the two Brazilian sides, especially as they've still got to play each other.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And in fact, they play each other in the next round. I think Inter is at home to Santos, so certainly that should be a very good match. But yeah, you know, I think another factor here is also, you know, the strongest is in La Paz in Bolivia and kind of high altitude, one of these high altitude South American places to play in. And I think that's definitely a factor. It makes, you know, these away matches much tougher. And, you know, from watching that strongest Inter game, I think it was fairly noticeable how the Inter players, were struggling, especially in the second half. You could just tell that, you know, the team as a whole lost a lot of energy. And I think that, you know, they were a bit lucky and I'm sure pretty happy to walk away with a point from that game. Because yeah, they went down 1-0 and only got the Gilberto goal towards the very end of the game. So, you know, I think that's always a factor, right? That altitude. And you're right. It is a tough group. Only two go through and, you know, most people would assume it's going to be Inter and Santos and they're both placed at the top, but you know, one bad result could be the difference between first and, you know, third or last place in the group.
In group two, then Flamengo didn't play this week. Lanús of Argentina beat Emelec in Ecuador, which helps Flamengo. It nullifies another opponent in some way. Emelec will now struggle to qualify. So Flamengo, their big game is next week in Paraguay, where they take on Olimpia. That's an important result. Now they threw away the home leg of the Tyria.
Yeah, that was the game that Flamengo went up 3-0 at home, and like you said, threw it away and ended up getting a 3-3. So, you know, I'm sure Flamengo will want to make a point. I think certainly Flamengo is the better side and they should win even away from home. But, you know, the fact that they tied at home is certainly not a good sign. I think they'll rely on Wagner Love continuing his hot form. And yeah, it's an important result. Like you said, Emelec looks like they're probably out, but Lanús is looking very strong. And yeah, Olympia could be kind of the dark horse here in this group.
In group four then, the next Brazilian team, Fluminense, also won in action. They look fairly safe and set to qualify. They've got 3 wins out of 3 so far. So the second qualifying place looks to be between the two Argentine sides, Boca and Arsenal. There should be a good scrap between those two. They meet next week at the Bombonera, so advantage Boca in that one. Good result for Vasco this week, Rio. They beat Libertad of Paraguay. So both teams are now on 7 points at the top of the group. It's a tough one because Alianza Lima are also a good team, and Nacional of Uruguay are certainly one of the better teams in the competition. So Vasco and Libertad are doing quite well to be 4 points clear at the moment.
Yeah, and I think when the groups were announced, I thought that this would be one of the more competitive groups. Like you said, I think all four sides are you know, fairly strong sides. And, you know, I think Vasco, you know, obviously we've talked about them a lot. And, you know, they have a very, very good squad and did very well last year, doing fairly well this year as well. But, you know, what I'm starting to see from them is that they get to points where they really struggle with creativity from midfield. I think, you know, last year they sort of relied on Felipe and Juninho Pernambucano a lot, and they are still relying on them this year. But, you know, those two are getting older and, you know, they're certainly still great players and can add a lot to the squad. And I think Vasco's win against Libertad was, you know, Juninho came on in the second half and sort of played an important role in both goals and got one of them. But I see this Vasco team struggling a lot with sort of the creative elements of midfield. You know, they can control possession very well, they defend very well, but sometimes they just struggle to find the back of the net. So I'm starting to see this recurring theme of this team, and you know, I think it'll be something that we have to watch out for and see how Vasco can cope with this over time.
Come back to that point when we discuss the state championships. Then this Nacional team, though, from Uruguay, if you do get the chance to take a look at them, there's some interesting storylines here. You've got Marcelo Gallardo, who's the coach formerly of Monaco and the Argentine national team, a very talented young coach by all accounts. But within the squad, some interesting players in Rio. You've got Tabare Viudes, who used to be at AC Milan, the experienced Uruguayan defender Andres Scotti, and then probably most recognizable of all, you've got Diego Placente, who has great experience in the Champions League, and also Alvaro Recoba. So there's some big names in that squad.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, also proven international experience in there, right? You know, Placente is at Argentina international. You know, must have had, you know, at least 15 to 20 caps for the national team, I would imagine, if I had to guess. So, you know, I think it's sometimes it's easy for people to think that some of these less known Libertadores sides, you know, have some fairly big players sometimes. And yeah, I think, like you said, you know, the story of the coach there, it's just an interesting team right now. And you know, I think it'll only spice up the competition.
The other Brazilian team then in the competition, are Corinthians. And they were in action at home to Cruz Azul this week, the Mexican team. They drew 0-0 out in Mexico the week before and got a 1-0 win at home. Very much typical Corinthians. They now move above the Mexican side into first place. They look to be sailing on into the next round.
Yeah, they do. And, you know, I think these Mexican teams are traditionally very tough competitors to the Brazilian sides. And I think the Mexican League as a whole has a lot of quality in it. But, you know, Corinthians controlled that Cruz Azul game from start to finish. I mean, they only won 1-0, but, you know, I think in some ways, like Vasco, they were struggling for creativity, but, you know, the match was always in their hands. And, you know, Cruz Azul came a little close to scoring right towards the end of the game and could have leveled it. I think they hit the post. But beyond that, it was fairly easy sailing for Corinthians.
Okay, moving on then, Rio. We've got a lot to get through. I want to go to the Olympics first. So in the past fortnight, Manuel Menezes has named his 52-man preliminary squad for the Olympic Games that will be cut down to, I think, 23 before the tournament starts. So there's some big talking points in the squad selection. Primarily, there's no Kaká, and Ronaldinho has been included in the squad, which will raise a lot of eyebrows, both inside and outside of Brazil. There's also no place for Fabio of Manchester United, despite his call-ups to the Brazil squad this year. His brother, Rafael, is in the squad. Marquinhos, who we've spoken about in recent weeks, a 17-year-old centre-back from Corinthians, he gets a call-up. And elsewhere, there's some other names included who weren't necessarily expected. Maybe Alcasson wasn't one who we thought would get in the squad. What did you make of it?
I mean, it was certainly an interesting squad, and you know, the obviously with you know the thing to keep in mind is that the Olympic squad has to be made up of players under the age of 23, with the exception of three players that can be designated as sort of veteran players above the age of 23. So this 52-man squad includes, I think, 16 players that are over 23. So from those 16, only three can actually be chosen. But because Mano included 16 players above age, it's really kind of, you know, close to an official Brazil squad, plus a bunch of extra young players thrown in. I think it was very interesting to see a list this large, because you kind of get a glimpse of what the pool of players that Mano and his staff sort of, you know, how they see the crop of emerging players. Because obviously, you know, this squad will become a lot smaller. But, you know, I wouldn't expect players like Gallardo from Flamengo or maybe Uvini, who's now on loan at Tottenham just because of the center backs. But there's certainly players here that will be cut. But like I said, it's interesting to get this glimpse at who Mano sees as the emerging talent from Brazil. But you're right, you know, no Kaká, no Robinho either. But to include Ronaldinho still, you know, it's becoming a very talked about point in Brazil that, you know, Mano seems to like Ronaldinho a lot. You know, the guy's getting a lot of negative talk about him in the Brazilian media, among fans, but Mano's still sticking with him, which is very interesting.
The squad dynamic is going to be interesting, because you can see from the names on the list in Rio that Brazil, as per usual, is very blessed in the attacking areas. In terms of attacking midfielders, they have great depth there. Beyond Lucas and Oscar, there's another layer of players who are very talented. And same in the striking positions. So, but then you look at the defense. And so Mano's named 9 centre-backs for this preliminary squad, 4 of which are overage. So we got to presume only one of them is going to be taken. And out of the 4 centre-backs who will more than likely end up going, so then 3 of the 5 younger players will be taken. Marquinhos, we've spoken about, is 17. He's played about 4 senior games. So that means 3 of the other 4 will therefore likely be taken. And they're not the strongest names you've seen in that position. Brazil looks fairly weak in the youth levels at centre-back.
Yeah, and, you know, you and I were talking about this earlier. You know, I think it definitely is an issue, right? At center back, the more recognizable names, and even, you know, emerging talent like Dede is already over 23, so he doesn't even qualify as one of these young players. I do agree, yeah, center back is by far the weakest position that Brazil has right now in terms of rising young talent. I think because of that, we'll see at least one of the 3 players be a center back, and possibly even 2 of the 3 over 23 players as center backs. You know, I wouldn't be surprised to see maybe Dede and somebody else like David Luiz or Thiago Silva. Because, you know, other than center back, I think the squad is extremely talented under, you know, the age of 23. I think left and right fullback, certainly lots of talented young players in there that can make that squad. You know, Rafael and Fagner are both fantastic and under 23. Maybe Alexandro, you know, Mano seems to really like him, so maybe he will be the starter at the left back position. I think defensive midfielder with the likes of Romelu and Casemiro doing so well. I think that they can probably get that spot. Sandro is still under 23 at Tottenham, let's not forget. So he's an experienced player that can be included. And yeah, up front, there's a lot of talent. So really, it looks very good overall, but you're right. That center back spot is the weak point.
You were talking about defensive midfielders. So he's named Elias and Fernandinho, who are overage. I really see very little chance of either of those players going. You spoke of Romulo and Sandro and Casemiro. And then the other 2 in the squad, Fernando and Alan, Alan Avasco and Fernando Agremio, have both started this season in top form. Fernando particularly he's been on the score sheet. He's been integral to what Agremio are doing this year.
Yeah, absolutely. Like you said, yeah, they've had great starts to the season. I think that Casemiro is still ahead of them, and I might even venture that Romelu might be ahead of them, even though Romelu's been out injured and not playing. And in fact, part of the reason why Alan at Vasco has gotten more chances is because of Romelu's injury. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out at Vasco, whether or not one of them ends up fighting for a spot or if there's room in the starting lineup for both. Certainly, they're both very talented, and I'd love to see them both playing together going forward. I think in my mind, Casemiro and Romelu is probably the duel that I would like to see. And you know, maybe because I've been slightly more disenchanted with Sandro this season than last season at Tottenham. But I think there's every chance for the likes of Fernando and Alan and perhaps even others to make a case for themselves until then.
Okay, moving on then, Rio, a bit about Brazilians abroad then. There's a few to get through. There's some big news in the last few days. Thiago Silva is going to miss a month of action, it seems, missing the Barcelona clash in the Champions League. He's picked up an injury this weekend, which is a big shame for him. But on the positive side, Lucas Leiva is expected back sometime near the end of the season. Possibly he's back training in the next few weeks, following Andre Santos, who returned only last week to competitive action. Over in China, Rio, a player you might know, Albina, scored twice for Shandong this week. Tell us a bit about him.
Well, Albina, I know him well from his days at Flamengo. He also had a fairly successful spell at Atlético Mineiro, I believe. And, you know, he's a hardworking player, fast and powerful striker. A little inconsistent with his finishing. He went through patches at Flamengo where he wouldn't score for months and months and months, and then he'd be on fire for a few months after that. So inconsistent player, but you know, I think when he's in form, he can be very good.
It wasn't so good for the Brazilians at Guangzhou. They lost in their AFC Champions League game to a Thai side. It was their first home defeat in 2 years. It was a bit disappointing that. Big news in England then, Rio. We've had three of the Desportivo Brazil boys go on a training camp, if you like, at Manchester United this week. Talk of them having signed on is a bit premature from what we understand. But also possibly action at Chelsea, who seem to be looking at a Flamengo youngster, Douglas Baggio, although having spoken to his press officer, there's little formal interest there.
Yeah, and to be honest, the Douglas Baggio rumors surprised me because, you know, he's considered a hot prospect at Flamengo, but, you know, he's there's many other young players at Flamengo that are considered better prospects than he is. He's doing quite well for their youth team right now, so he certainly has a chance of being a star in the future. But, you know, personally, I haven't seen enough of him to judge what his potential is going to be like. But like I said, a bit of a surprise to me, and I wonder if it's just random media rumors just to get some page clicks through.
We'll move to a bit of domestic action then. This weekend there's been a full round of games in both Rio de Janeiro and Sao Paulo. I know we promised you roundups from Minas Gerais and the Gaúcho Championship, but Rio's promised to prepare that for next week if we get him a guest to talk about it with. So he's backing out a bit, but we'll give him this chance. In your favorite then, Rio, the Carioca Championship. So a good win for Flamengo, 4-2 away at Volta Redonda. But it wasn't plain sailing for them.
No, it wasn't. It was, you know, from I think a neutral's perspective, a fairly exciting match to watch. Lots of goals. But, you know, Luis Antonio, who's a youngster at Flamengo that we've talked about in the past, promising young midfielder, you know, got a red card in the first half. So Flamengo had to play off a player down for most of the game. Eventually, Volta Redonda also got their own red card and then a second red card. So it was also lots of cards in the game. But yeah, you know, I think the story for Flamengo was that even while a man down, they still played very hard and were in the game. And Vogdan Love had tremendous game, had two very nice goals. And you know, the team as a whole, I think, having gone a man down, still did quite well, especially because Flamengo went down 1-0 in the game, and they made that comeback. So it was good in the sense of judging the commitment and the effort that the players put in. I think it was all positive. Interestingly, Ronaldinho was not part of the game. I think he was suspended for it. But, you know, it's funny that the game that I'm talking about, Flamengo playing really hard and playing, you know, like they really want to win, they showed more commitment in this game than they have in a while. And it's interesting that Ronaldinho was not a part of it.
Talking of teams playing with commitment and Rio, it's one thing that you could always say about Botafogo in the last 12 months. They always put in a good shift for the side, and they're probably the form team of the Carioca at the moment, despite Fluminense winning the first half of the state championship. They had to beat Botafogo on penalties, and since the restart for the second phase, Botafogo have been excellent. They beat Vasco 3-1 last week, a hat-trick for Felipe Gabriel, and he scored again this week from midfield, with Jobson scoring the second against Duque de Caxias. They're really looking quite impressive at this stage of the campaign.
Yeah, they are. I mean, I think it's important to keep in mind that out of the big four sides, they're the only one not in the Libertadores, so they don't have to worry about quite as many games. They haven't really had to rotate their squad as much as the other big teams in the Carioca. But you're right, I think they're playing very well. They started off that game against Duque de Caxias incredibly well, just electric, fast, dynamic. I think they lost a little bit of steam throughout the game. But you're right, Felipe Gabriel has been, I think, 5 goals in 5 games so far for him. So he's been, you know, an instant success. And Jobson also got, you know, his first game after coming back from the doping suspension that he had, looking to, you know, put his treble pass behind him and you know, prove that he still has a lot to show out in the football field. So I think overall lots of good things happening about the Fogo right now.
You mentioned that they're not playing in the Libertadores, so they don't have to rotate. And that's obviously going to help them as a team, because they can play the same 11 players week after week after week, whereas maybe Flamengo or Vasco, they're chopping and changing for each game. They're not always training with the same players. It's going to be a big advantage, and I think the results in the past couple of weeks are even more impressive, considering that they haven't always had Andrezinho, Michael Suel, and Elkas on that attacking trio, though they haven't always been fit, which has allowed Felipe Gabriel to come in and perform so well.
Yeah, absolutely. And Jobson as well, right? I think he's also one of the ones competing with those players in those positions. But yeah, I think you're right. You know, and it's not even just the rotation because of more games for Libertadores, but even just the mere travel of it all. You know, I think it's underrated how taxing it can be on players to be traveling, you know, across South America to Mexico, kind of fairly early on in the season, right? So, you know, I think, you know, these other teams that are playing in the Libertadores, they just get more tired more quickly into the season. So I think Botafogo has everything to have a bit more steam, if you will, sort of heading into the finale of the state championships and then into the Brasileirão.
We touched upon this when we were talking about the Libertadores. And Vasco, they started the season fairly well, but it's almost as if, Rio, that we spoke about them having a small squad before. It's almost as if this weight of games is now catching up with them. They drew 1-1 with Resende today, a goal from Alexandro there. Alexandro also scored in the week when they were playing in the Copa Libertadores. But they're so reliant on these aging players in the attacking areas, and so Janinho Pernambucano or Felipe or Alexandro, as much as they do have great young talent in midfield and in defense, when it comes to creativity, they're relying on guys who are well into their 30s and who are playing every single game across across the continent, as you say.
Yeah, you know, I think it is a problem for them. And, you know, I spoke of my surprise last year that this fairly small squad went so far. And, you know, I think even though they also started fairly brightly this year, I think a lot of it is the extra motivation of, you know, coming in second in the Brasileirão and going out in the semis of the Sudamericana. I think that, you know, those things happening at the end of a season for you make you feel like you have to prove a point in the new year, which is great motivation-wise and I think has carried Vasco through. But as you said, you know, just purely looking at the players and you know, the age of the players, I think there is a bit of a creativity problem here because, yeah, they're relying on these fairly old players that, you know, they can still have great games here and there and can have moments of brilliance, but they just don't have the legs anymore to have, you know, in Brazil you play 50, 60 games a year. And, you know, to ask a 35 or 36 year old to be there throughout that entire journey, that's a lot to ask out of a mid 30 year old. So, you know, I'm very interested to see how they're going to cope with this. And, you know, I'm especially surprised that they let, Bernardo, I think they let him go out on loan to Atlético Mineiro. And that surprised me because
Santos.
I felt like that. Oh, yeah, to Santos, sorry. So, you know, it surprised me that they let him leave on loan when it's an area of the team that I think they really need that extra, you know, player in their squad to step in.
We shouldn't forget, though, that he did take the club to court for wages that hadn't been paid, and therefore the fans had turned on him in the past few weeks.
Yeah, and you know, the thing in Brazil is that this type of thing happens very often, but, you know, just as quickly as somebody can fall out of favor, you know, if the club leadership indirectly really wanted it, I think they could have done a little bit more to salvage the situation. So I don't necessarily buy it that, you know, there's nothing they could have done, so just ship him out. You know, the guy did very well last year, and, you know, they paid money to keep him, so I think they should have tried harder, especially because it is an area of need for the team.
We'll see how they get on. And then Fluminense, continuing as Fluminense do, goals from Freire, I think it was again this week, and Wellington Nem's been on the score sheet once more. Typical Fluminense then so far this season. They look, along with Botafogo, very strong. But in this system that the Carioca Championship employs, Rio, with these two stages, we can't really rule any of the big four teams out.
No, you can. And, you know, traditionally, right, what happens is that it's the big four teams that qualify for the semis, and it's unusual when it's not one of those teams in there. So, you know, I think Fluminense obviously won the primeiro turno, what we call the Taça Guanabara. And, you know, I think they are struggling a little bit with the second stage. They're currently sitting in third place in their group. So if it were to end today, they would not qualify for the semis of the second round. But, you know, I think there's still games to play. And traditionally, there's a big push by the big teams towards the end to make sure that they get the qualification that they need. But, yeah, for Fluminense, I think, you know, Fred is still Fred and scoring lots of goals and got another two goals for them. And, you know, both assisted by Wellington Nang, who for one of them sort of made a nice run down the right side of the box and cut it back for Fred to have a fairly easy goal. And then the second one, you know, Nang won a penalty when he was 1-on-1 of the goalie, and then Fred converted the penalty. So, you know, I think it continues on the theme of Wellington Nang having established himself as a key figure for this Fluminense team, and he's not really relinquishing that role. You know, I think it's always good to see a player not only come in and prove himself and win a spot in the team, but then once he does that, to continue proving that he's valuable and not to sort of become accustomed to it and then see a drop of form. So it's good to see him continue on this great form that he's in.
Moving on to Sao Paulo quickly then, Rio. Santos are winning as we speak. They're 2-0 up against Bragantino. Goals from Alan Kardecki and Borges. That's good to see both strikers on the score sheet. Away at Mirasol, then Sao Paulo also 1-0 up. As those games are in progress, we won't venture onto them. The other two big teams then in the Sao Paulo State Rio met earlier today. It was Palmeiras up against Corinthians. And a couple of weeks ago, I would think you'll remember, we discussed whether, when their back's up against the wall, whether Corinthians had enough to win these big games. And today they showed they might just have that extra quality when it counts. They were 1-0 down to what is a very strong Palmeiras team this season, and they came back to win 2-1 at home. So encouraging signs for Corinthians.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, it's similar to the Carioca in the sense of, you know, Palmeiras, like Botafogo, is the one side not in the Libertadores, while the other big four for the São Paulo State Championship are in the Libertadores and have to sort of juggle these extra games, these important extra games into their schedule. So I think it's given Palmeiras a very good opportunity to gel as a team and get a consistent run going. And it's really, I think, the first time under Filipão that we're seeing Palmeiras play very well. So, you know, going into this game, I think a lot of people, yeah, like you said, were curious to see how these two teams would handle the situation. And, you know, Palmeiras, I think, were quite dominant in the first half and could easily have gone 3 or 4 goals ahead, but ended up just going 1 goal ahead. And then Corinthians came into the second half and kind of got 2 quick goals. You know, there was, I think, 5 or 6 minutes apart from each other. Almost identical goals, you know, from a set piece situations. So, you know, I think after Corinthians went up, Palmeiras looked a little stunned that all of a sudden, after having played so well and looking dominant and winning, all of a sudden they were down. And I think they kind of lost their way a little bit. And Corinthians were able to sit back and control possession and sort of play more the counterattack if need be. So, you know, I think we saw Palmeiras play well, but not step it up once they went down, which I think says a lot about a team's character, right? Whereas Corinthians, like you said, is the type of team that they go down, but they still believe in themselves. They're still in it. They still fight hard. So, you know, I think we learned something new about Palmeiras today, and what we saw from Corinthians only reaffirms what we knew from them last year being the reigning champions.
We got some questions then, Rio. I hope you're ready to be put on the spot.
Always.
Okay, so Stephen London asks, how do you think Corinthians' Ralph would do in European football?
That's a good question. You know, he's certainly a player that a lot of the big European teams have been sniffing around, if you will. He was certainly one of the better players in that squad that were champions last year for Corinthians. You know, I think he's a very smart player, great sense of positioning. You know, he's what we call a volante in Brazil, which is pretty much a defensive midfielder. I think that I would like, you know, I don't think he's of the quality to step in at a major European club, but I think he could do quite well at sort of a more mid-range European club. So I wouldn't mind seeing him make the European move and then maybe he could improve his game. I think Volante and defensive midfielders for Brazil are an interesting position because I think that, you know, they see a much more specific type of player in Brazil. They're used to going up against the classic number 10s and, you know, it's a little bit more about man marking at times. And it's about sort of containing a lot of creativity. Whereas in Europe, it's you know, you see a lot of different types of teams and styles of players, especially in the more attacking midfield positions. So, you know, I think any Brazilian player that plays that position, they need time to grow in Europe and to, you know, get used to a different type of competition. So I think he could do well, like I said, at a mid-level European club. And I, you know, we might very well see that happening if Corinthians decide to cash in on him.
Okay, Andrew from Tennessee has a question for you. He asks, with Flamengo looking at signing Adriano and Ronaldinho having missed a lot of training in recent weeks, do the board need to take a stricter line on these senior players?
Well, you know, I think there's been a lot of news around this just this past week, right? So, you know, one of these training sessions that Ronaldinho missed was just this last week, and he missed it because he was out partying the night before and then called in with some stomach pains and missed a morning training session. Turns out he was, at a club until 4 in the morning, sort of watching a group perform. And who was he there with? He was there with his buddy Adriano. So Adriano's not even back at Flamengo yet, but he's already out partying with Ronaldinho. So that's probably a sign of what's to potentially come. You know, I think that, interestingly enough, the club actually released a series of flyers, essentially, to the players during a training session this last week. And it was essentially a letter from the club to the players saying that, you know, the club expects them as professionals, as athletes, to take care of their bodies, to, you know, eat well, to train hard, and, you know, even went as far as saying go to sleep early, which seemed like a very, you know, it was given out to all the players, but, you know, everybody knows that were a couple players specifically that it was targeted at. And, you know, the players kind of made fun of it and called it unprofessional, and Ronaldinho was clearly pissed off about it and said that, you know, the media just says he's out partying all the time, but he's a family man and he's at home a lot taking care of his kids. So it's an interesting situation. I think, you know, the club has to do more, yes, but they have to do it in a smart way. And, you know, to some extent, you know, at some point, if they push too hard, they might come head to head with Ronaldinho. And if that happens, then the club is going to be in an interesting position, right? Do they get rid of him and make the statement that they want a professional group that's going to follow the rules? Or do they cave in and let, you know, players like Ronaldinho and Adriano, who are known for, you know, going out and missing practices when they feel like it, you know, are you know, it's a much bigger issue in Brazil than it is in Europe as a whole. And, you know, unfortunately, I don't see the club pushing so hard, because ultimately they'd rather keep Ronaldinho and keep him happy rather than create a situation that might cause Ronaldinho to leave.
And a final question then, Rio, I'm going to have to leave somehow. Nana from Ghana says that Felipe Coutinho has done well at Espanyol so far. He's been scoring lots of goals. Nana really likes him, and he wants to know if you think he will do well at the Olympics this summer.
You know, he's definitely a very talented player. I'll be honest, I haven't been able to see too much of him for Espanyol since his move. I only saw one game. But I saw him for Inter a little bit. I had seen him for Vasco, and he also was part of that Brazil under 20 squad. So I saw him there. And, you know, he's one of these players that, you know, honestly, I'm a bit undecided upon. He has a lot of talent, that's for sure. And sometimes he's tremendous and makes you think that he's going to go on and do a lot of incredible things in his career. But I'm just not convinced the intelligence is quite there yet. You know, I think the talent is there. I think his game understanding and his decision making needs a lot of improvement. And if he can work on that aspect of his game, if that can be, you know, coached, then I think we can see a lot of great things from him. But like I said, I'm a little undecided on which way his career is going to go right now.
Okay, I think that's it for this week then, Rio. We'll be back next week where we'll look a bit more at Minas Gerais and the Gaúcho Championship, as well as the latest news from Brazilians abroad, the latest news from the Libertadores, and much, much more. See you next week, and goodbye.